Part 2. Witchcraft. Underneath all the tales, there does lie something different from the tales. How different? In this, that the thing which is invoked is a thing of a different nature, however it may put on a human appearance or indulge in its servants their human appetites. It is cold, it is hungry, it is violent, it is illusory. The warm blood of children and the intercourse at the Sabbath do not satisfy it. It wants something more and other. It wants obedience. It wants souls. And yet it pines for matter. It never was, and yet it always is. Charles Williams, Witchcraft. Devil worship is outside the main body of magical tradition, which is concerned with the magician's domination of all powers, natural and supernatural. It is the preserve of those who surrender themselves to the powers of evil to become one with them. According to the 16th century Fausti Hörensfang, Faust's Harrowing of Hell, in a preface supposedly written by Faust himself, "If you wish to become true magi and perform my deeds, you must have knowledge of God as well as of other creatures, but you must not honor him in any fashion but what pleases the princes of the world. He who wishes to practice my art, let him love the spirits of hell and those who reign in the air, for these alone are they who can make us happy in this life, and he who would have wisdom must seek it from the devil. For what thing in the world is there whose best exponent is not the devil, who is the prince of the world? In a word, ask what you will, riches, honor, and glory, you can have them through him, and what you expect of good after your death, in that you deceive yourself." In one tradition, the magician masters evil spirits and makes use of them. In the other, he bows down before the Lord of Evil as the fount and provider of his own magical power. It is those who consciously align themselves with the devil, who love the spirits of hell, and spurn the promise of heaven as a snare set by the deceitful Christian God, who delight in the two principal rituals of Satanism, the Witches' Sabbath and the Black Mass. The nature and even the existence of the Witches' Sabbath have been much disputed. Some modern writers dismiss the whole European witch epidemic as a delusion sired by fanaticism out of credulity. Others accept the bulk of the witches' confessions as genuine. The truth probably lies between these extremes, but closer to the first of them. The evidence leaves little doubt that many innocent people made up confessions under the pressure of physical and mental torture. Some of those who confessed without torture were clearly deluded. The details of the confessions were usually similar because they were based on general popular agreement about what witches did and were made in response to leading questions. But to reject all the huge quantities of evidence as illusory, to assume that beneath so much smoke there was no fire at all, seems unduly skeptical. Witches and Satanists exist today, and it is likely that they existed in the past, if only in small numbers. The witch hunts began in France in the early 13th century, not long after the crusade against the Cathars, but did not blossom into their full and ugly flower until much later. The first trials, which we know of, were held in 1245 at Toulouse in the south of France, the principal center of Catharism. The earliest accounts of the witches' Sabbath do not come till a century later, in the same area in 1335, and remain meager until more than 100 years later still. The first book to give a detailed account of witchcraft, John Nideus Formicarius, was written about 1435. The great majority of the French trials date between 1450 and 1670. There were witch trials in Switzerland, Savoy, and Italy in the early 15th century, and in Germany from 1446, but the bulk of the German trials came after 1570. The first execution for witchcraft in Spain occurred in 1498, but the Spanish Inquisition took a cautious and skeptical attitude to accusations of witchcraft, and trials were comparatively rare. The English and Scottish trials date mainly from the 16th and 17th centuries, from 1566 on. There was a witch scare in Sweden in the later 17th century, and the trials at Salem, Massachusetts, began in 1692. The relatively late dates of the trials make it difficult to accept the well-known theory advanced by Margaret Murray and other writers that the witch cult was the survival of a pagan religion. Quote, "The evidence proves that underlying the Christian religion was a cult practiced by many classes of the community, chiefly, however, by the more ignorant or those in the less thickly inhabited parts of the country. It can be traced back to pre-Christian times and appears to be the ancient religion of Western Europe." Unquote. Unfortunately for this enticing theory, the evidence proves nothing of the sort. Not enough is known about the pagan religions of Western Europe to connect any of them with the witches, and there is a gap in time between the pagan cults and the witch trials. In England, one of the last bastions of paganism in Western Europe, there is no evidence that pagan cults survived later than the time of Canute, who died in 1035, and on the continent they seem to have disappeared long before. The witches were regarded by their Christian antagonists as a new sect and were persecuted as heretics, not as pagans. Pagan ideas and customs did survive in witchcraft, as in Christianity itself, but this is not the same thing as the survival of a particular cult. Witches existed from very early times and were always thought to be in touch with evil spirits and the powers of the underworld. In medieval Europe, the prince of the underworld and the master of demons was Satan, and it is probable that the god of the witches was not the supposed horned god of a hypothetical old religion, but the devil of Christianity. The principal beliefs and rituals of medieval witches seem to have come from the Cathars, Luciferans, and other sects accused of worshipping the devil, though the witch religion drew on many other sources, magic and sorcery, classical traditions, the Bible, pagan customs and beliefs, and accepted popular notions about the behavior of witches. It is also likely that the persecutions of Satanist sects and the witch trials themselves stimulated the activities they were intended to suppress. The righteous were horrified, but some of the unrighteous were probably attracted, and the details of ritual and belief brought out and publicized in the confessions could be used as models for imitation. In the same way, modern witches have been strongly influenced by the Murray theory, an interesting example of life conforming itself to fiction. The Greeks and Romans and the pagan peoples of Western Europe believed that witches could work various kinds of harmful magic, blasting crops, bringing storms or drought, sickening cattle, killing or injuring people, helping or hindering love. There is no trace of the later witches' Sabbath and its rituals, but it was believed that witches met together on occasion, usually at night. The Norse witches were supposed to meet and hold high revel on the eve of the 1st of May. The Salic law of Charlemagne says that if a man is accused of having carried a cauldron to the place where witches meet, and it cannot be proved, the slanderer must pay a fine. It was also accepted that witches were cannibals. If a witch is found guilty of eating a man, the Salic laws say, she shall be fined about 3 times as much as the slanderer. If witches ate people as often as they were thought to do, which seems unlikely, it may have been the result of the magical theory that a man's life energy can be acquired by eating him. Witches were associated by the Greeks and Romans with darkness and death, with night and the moon, the mistress of night, and with the beings who rule the dead. The divine patron of witchcraft was not a horned god, but a goddess, Selene, or Hecate, or Diana, all of whom were moon goddesses. Hecate, who came originally from Asia Minor, was the goddess most often invoked by witches and magicians. She was threefold, represented with 3 heads or 3 bodies, linked with 3 phases of the moon, new, full, and old, and identified as Luna, the moon, in the sky, Diana on earth, and Proserpine in the underworld. She ruled ghosts, night and darkness, tombs, dogs, blood, and terror. She was also the goddess of crossroads. Legions of ghosts were believed to follow her as she roamed grimly through the night, and offerings of food used to be left at crossroads for the ghosts. Cynics and unprincipled persons sometimes ate these offerings. Hecate herself seems to have been forgotten in early Christian times, but memories of her as Diana survived. In the 6th century, Saint Caesarius of Al expelled the demon whom the peasants called Diana from a tormented girl. In 1318, Pope John XXII ordering the investigation of a group of magicians at his court in Avignon, said that they copulated with demonesses called Diani. Tales of the wandering ghosts and their feasts at the crossroads also survived. In the early Middle Ages, there were various stories in circulation about hordes of night-flying demons and dead souls. Diana was connected with these, and the belief grew up that mortals could ride with her at night. Quote, "It is also not to be omitted that some wicked women, perverted by the devil, seduced by illusions and phantasms of demons, believe and profess themselves in the hours of night to ride upon certain beasts with Diana, the goddess of pagans. And an innumerable multitude of women, and in the silence of the dead of night, to traverse great spaces of earth, and to obey her commands as of their mistress, and to be summoned to her service on certain nights." Unquote. This passage from an ecclesiastical regulation called the Canon Episcopi, which has been traced back to the 9th century, was quoted by Burchard, Bishop of Worms, about 1020, and was constantly repeated and commented on by later writers. Burchard says that the goddess was also called Herodias, the mortal enemy of John the Baptist, and Holda, a Teutonic goddess. He asks whether his readers believe, as many women do, quote, "that in bed with your husband at night, you leave the house, though all the doors are shut, and journey great distances with others similarly deluded, and strike men dead with no visible weapon," unquote. The night riders were associated with the cannibal vampires and ghosts believed in by the Greeks, Romans, and Jews, and the cannibalism ascribed to witches was credited to them. Writing about 1155, John of Salisbury said that a few poor women and ignorant men believed that the Queen of Night, or Herodias, summoned them to meetings by night at which there was feasting and celebration. Those who went were rewarded or punished as they deserved, which was later a feature of the Sabbath. Children were eaten and then vomited up whole, and the presiding goddess returned them to their cradles. These stories, based on classical beliefs about Hecate, Diana, and demons or ghosts which loved to suck human blood, were repeated and widely believed. They probably lie behind the accusations made against Cathars and witches that they flew to their meetings on animals or broomsticks. The witch's flying ointment also goes back to classical times. In The Golden Ass of Apuleius, a witch smears her body with ointment and mutters a spell to turn herself into a bird and fly. It was recognized as early as the 15th century that the ointment itself might cause delusions. John Nidea tells a story in his former Carius about a woman who tested the ointment's efficiency by rubbing herself with it and muttering the appropriate spells in the presence of several trustworthy witnesses. She fell into a disturbed sleep. When she woke up, she insisted that she had been with Lady Venus and Diana, but the witnesses testified that she had never left the room. Recipes for the ointment frequently include aconite and belladonna, which are likely to cause delusions, as well as hellebore root, hemlock, baby's fat or soot as a thickener, and bat's blood to aid nocturnal flight. Many witches confessed to flying to the Sabbath, but others said they walked there or rode on horseback, and some of the accounts of flying suggest ritual dances rather than real flights. Witch hunters found the Canon Episcopi a stumbling block, because it firmly stated that the ride with Diana, and by implication the flight to the Sabbath, was a delusion. In 1458, Nicolas Jacquier, an inquisitor in France and Bohemia, said that the Canon Episcopi did not apply, because the witches were a new sect and not the same as the earlier night riders. That this was true is suggested by the fact that the classical witches and the night riders were devotees of a goddess, while the presiding deity of the witches' Sabbath was almost always male. Some traces of the goddess did linger on in witchcraft, however. In the early 16th century, it was said that meetings of Italian witches were presided over by La Signora, who wore a golden robe. Basque witches in the early 17th century had a queen of the Sabbath who was the principal bride of the devil. A queen of Elfame or Elfin, who copulated with male witches, was mentioned in some of the Scottish trials. Modern witches have resurrected the goddess, worshipping a queen of heaven and all living. The goddess and her rout brought into medieval witchcraft the flight to the Sabbath, feasting and cannibalism, rewards and punishments, and the significance of crossroads as suitable places for holding Sabbaths and making pacts with the devil. But the Night Riders do not account for the major features of the witches' Sabbath. The word Sabbath seems to have been applied to the witches' meetings, often held once a week, through hostile association with the Jews, who were also constantly persecuted by Christians. Sabbat, which some writers insist on, is simply the Latin and French spelling of Sabbath. Some early writers called the meetings synagogues, like the Cathar meetings. Besides the ordinary weekly meetings, special festivals were held on certain evenings each year, but there was not as much general agreement about the dates of these as the Murray School of Thought has suggested. In some areas, the great feasts were held on February the 2nd, Candlemas, the eve of May the 1st, Walpurgisnacht, August the 1st, Lammas, and October 31st, the eve of All Saints or All Hallows, Halloween. These days point to the survival of pagan customs because they mark the old Celtic division of the year into two halves, beginning on May 1st, Beltane, and November 1st, Samhain, with two subdivisions starting on February the 1st and August 1st. Beltane, the beginning of summer, and Samhain, the beginning of winter and the day of the powers of darkness, were both celebrated with fire festivals. In the 8th century, All Saints' Day was moved to November the 1st, or Samhain from its original date, May the 13th, which in Roman times had been a day dedicated to the Lemures, malevolent ghosts which drank human blood. Another important witch day in some areas was Midsummer Eve, the eve of St. John the Baptist, which had been celebrated as a festival all over pagan Europe. But some witches seem to have concentrated on important Christian festivals for their high Sabbaths. The witches of Lyon, about 1460, observed Holy Thursday, Ascension Day, Corpus Christi, and the Thursday after Christmas. Basque witches, condemned in 1610, kept the nights before various Christian feasts, including Christmas, Easter, Whitsun, Corpus Christi, St. John's Day, and All Saints. In the 17th century, the Lancashire witches held high revel on Good Friday. The first accounts of the Sabbath were given by Anne-Marie de Georgelles and Catherine de Laure, two elderly witches of Toulouse, tried in 1335. They confessed that they had belonged to Satan's hosts for the past 20 years and had given themselves to him for this life and the next. They had attended many of the weekly Sabbaths and had committed all manner of excesses with other men and women there. Both believed that God and the devil were equal powers, God ruling the sky and the devil, the earth. The struggle between them had gone on since the beginning of time and would continue for all eternity. Souls which the devil gained were lost to God and lived perpetually on earth or in the air. Catherine de Laure believed that Christianity would soon be destroyed. This dualist view of God and the devil, and the belief that the devil rules the earth, found in an area which had been a hotbed of Catharism, strongly suggests Cathar influence. Anne-Marie de Georgelles said that one day, outside the town, she saw a man of huge stature coming towards her across the water. He was dark-skinned, his eyes were fiery, and he was dressed in animal skins. He asked her to give herself to him, and she said yes. He blew into her mouth, and from the following Saturday on, she was born to the Sabbath simply because it was his will. At the Sabbath there was a huge he-goat, and after greeting him, she submitted to his pleasure. The goat taught her incantations, spells, and the secrets of poisonous plants. He told her to honor the devil and offend God by making sacrilegious communions. She used the secrets the goat taught her and had done all the harm she could. Catherine de Laure, who had also done all the harm she could, had been introduced to witchcraft by her lover, a shepherd. On Sabbath nights, she fell into a strange sleep during which she was carried to the Sabbath. There she adored the he-goat, served his pleasure and that of all the others present. She said they drank revolting liquids and ate tasteless food. They also feasted on the corpses of newborn children. About 1375, Pierre Valin of La Tour du Pin gave himself body and soul to the devil and did him homage, according to a confession he made as an old man, without torture, in 1438. He gave the devil his baby sister, and the devil killed her. He rode to the witch meeting on a stick. They ate children, and he had intercourse with the devil, who took the shape of a 20-year-old girl. Pierre Valin had been convicted of sorcery in 1430. According to Nicolas Jacquier, writing in 1458, an old man confessed without torture that as a small child, about 1404, he and his sister and baby brother were taken to the Sabbath by their mother and offered to the devil, who was in the shape of a goat. The children were told that the devil was their lord and master who would do them much good. They touched the devil's head, and he touched them on the hip with his forefoot, leaving an indelible mark the size of a bean, which the old man showed to the investigators. John Nideo says that the devil appeared at witch meetings in the form of a man. The witches dug up the bodies of unbaptized babies and boiled them in a cauldron. A magic ointment was made from the flesh, and the liquid had to be drunk by anyone who joined the sect. A new witch was initiated in a church on Sunday, forswore Christianity and the Eucharist, and did homage to the little master. Martin Lefranc, writing about 1440, said the devil appeared at the Sabbath in the shape of a cat, which all the witches worshipped. He gave them magic powders and ointments. They feasted and then coupled, the women who had no men being served by demons. They flew to and from the meetings on sticks. A more detailed account of the Sabbath and the witches' initiation procedure is given in an anonymous tract, Errores Gesariorum, written in Savoy about 1450. A new witch is taken to the synagogue by his sponsor and presented to the devil, who is in the form of an imperfect man or an animal, usually a black cat. He takes an oath to be faithful to the devil and the society, to come whenever summoned, to bring in new members, to reveal none of the society's secrets, and to revenge all injuries done to its members. He also promises to kill children aged 3 or under, and to do his best to impede marriages by sorcery. After this, he adores the devil and kisses his backside. The devil gives his new servant a staff and box full of magic ointments and powders. Then they all feast, chewing on roast and broiled babies as delicacies, and they dance. The lights are put out, and the devil cries, Mestler, mestlet, mele, mele, and there is a promiscuous orgy without regard to sex or family relationships. Afterwards, the lights are relit, and they eat and drink again. Anyone who has broken a rule of the society is severely beaten. Before leaving, they urinate and evacuate in a cask, which they say is done in contempt of the sacrament. Antoine Rose, a witch of the same area, Savoy, tried in 1477, gave a similar description, varying in detail. Under torture, she confessed she had told a neighbor she was in need of money, and he promised to help her. One evening he took her to a place where there was a synagogue of people enjoying themselves and dancing backwards. She was frightened, but they persuaded her to do homage to the devil, a dark man called Robinet, who spoke to her in a hoarse, almost unintelligible voice, and promised her plenty of money. She renounced God and the Christian faith, kissed the devil's foot, and agreed to pay him a sum of money each year, which she had done. The devil gave her a purse full of gold and silver, but when she got home, it was empty. He also gave her a stick 18 inches long and a jar of ointment. She would smear the stick with the ointment, put it between her legs, and say, Go, in the devil's name, go, and immediately be carried through the air to the synagogue. There the witches feasted on bread, meat, and wine. They danced, and the devil turned into a black dog. They all kissed his hindquarters. The lights were put out, and the devil called, Mechlet, Mechlet, and the men coupled with the women, dog fashion. The devil gave them powders and ointments for injuring men and cattle. He told them to do all the harm they could, to worship him in church instead of Christ, and when they took communion, to spit out the host. At one meeting a consecrated host was brought, and they trampled on it. The order of events at the Sabbath varied from one area to another. Usually it opened with the witches paying formal homage to the devil. According to Guazzo's Compendium Maleficarum, 1626, the witches generally lit a fire and the devil sat on a throne in the form of a goat or a dog. Quote, and they approach him to adore him, but not always in the same manner. For sometimes they bend their knees as suppliants, and sometimes they stand with their backs turned, and sometimes they kick their legs high up so that their heads are bent back and their chins point to the sky. They turn their backs, and going backwards like crabs, put out their hands behind them to touch him in supplication. When they speak, they turn their faces to the ground, and they do all things in a manner altogether foreign to the use of other men. Unquote. Then came the offering of candles to the devil and the obscene kiss. New members were initiated, which his children were presented to the devil and sometimes baptized by him, and on occasion the devil would marry a witch couple. Next, the witches sat down to a feast. This was followed by frenzied dancing, which led up to the orgy, in which the devil himself joined, apparently distributing his favors among as many of the witches as possible. Or sometimes the orgy followed a religious ceremony, a parody of the Catholic Mass. Afterwards, the witches reported on the harm they had done since the last meeting, and finally the devil dismissed them. The descriptions of the Sabbath in the Confessions reproduce many of the allegations which had been made earlier against devil-worshipping sects. The meeting by night, the devil's appearance as man, cat, dog, or goat, the obscene kiss, the renunciation of Christianity, the slaughtering of children, the feasting, and the orgy which followed the putting out of the lights. The witches also shared with the earlier sects a particular hatred for the Eucharist, which was originally rooted in a denial of the Church's claim to be the channel between man and God. The words spoken by the priest in the Mass transformed the bread and wine into the body and blood of Christ, and in eating the body, the worshipper became one with Christ. But the heretics believed themselves to be in direct touch with God, without needing the intervention of the Church, the priest, and the consecrated host. Disrespect for the Eucharist, expressed, for example, by heretics who said that the host tasted to them like dung, turned in Satanism to positive hatred for the body and blood of the detested Christian Savior. Witches had long been accused of cannibalism, but the initiate's oath to impede marriages and the emphasis on child slaughter suggest that one factor in the early development of the witch cult was the heretical horror of marriage and procreation. From disapproving of childbirth to killing children seems a drastic step, but Clémentius of Bussy and his followers had been accused of taking it. Later, one reason for cannibalism was evidently that it bound the witch to the sect like the toad's excrement of the Turin Waldensians. Some witches said they had eaten small children in the belief that afterwards they would be unable to confess, presumably because they acquired the child's inability to talk. The obscene kiss appears constantly in the Confessions. Some witches said the devil had a second face on his rump, which they kissed. Jeannette d'Abadie, a Basque witch, said they kissed the devil's face, then his navel, phallus, and backside, which recalls one of the accusations against the Templars. Witches at Avignon in 1581 said that on initiation, the witch cut off a piece of her clothing and gave it to the devil as a sign of homage. This had earlier been a feature of the Luciferan initiation ceremony. Candles were used to provide light at the Sabbath, which was usually held at night, and they also figured in the ritual. In 1564, three men and a woman at Poitiers said they had worshipped a monstrous black goat, kissing it obscenely and offering it candles in fealty. In some cases, the devil lit the candles and gave them to the worshippers. In others, they lit them from a candle which he held, or which was fixed to one of his horns. This may possibly be another example of a connection between the devil and the sun, the source of light. The anti-Christian character of the cult is clear from the earliest accounts. The Malleus Maleficarum, Hammer of Witches, written by two inquisitors, published in 1486, and regarded in its day as the leading authority on witchcraft, says the renunciation of the Catholic faith was the first of four particular points required of witches, the others being devotion to all evil, the offering of unbaptized children to Satan, and the free indulgence of lust. It also says that many people who asked witches for help complained that in return they had to promise to spit or shut their eyes or mumble offensive words when they saw the host elevated during Mass. The victims of an appalling persecution at Bamberg in the early 17th century said that witches renounced Christianity with the words, "Here I stand on this dung and abjure Jesus Christ." Four Bamberg witches, convicted of keeping the host in their mouths and afterwards defiling it, were sentenced to be torn with red-hot pincers as many times as they had defiled it. Though it does not appear in the early descriptions, later witches confessed to parodying the Mass at the Sabbath, and this was believed to be, and perhaps became, a stock feature of the ritual. The Jesuit Martin del Rio, writing about 1596, said that witches used holy water and followed the Catholic rite closely. Pierre de Lancre, a lawyer and fanatic witch hunter, describing his investigations in the French Basque country in 1609, said that the clergy of the area were infected with Satanism. Five priests were identified as having travestied the Mass at Sabbaths, and one of them had been paid 200 crowns by the devil as a reward. On some occasions, the devil himself said Mass. A deposed Presbyterian minister, who was one of the Lothian witches, tried in 1678, took the part of the devil and preached a sermon to the assembled coven, telling them they were happier in him than they could ever be in God. Quote, "Him they saw, but God they could not see. And in mockery of Christ and his holy ordinance of the sacrament of his supper, he gives the sacrament to them, bidding them eat it and to drink it in remembrance of himself." Unquote. The communion bread was like wafers, it was said, and the drink was blood or black moss water. Renouncing the God of the Christians, the witches took the devil for their God. According to de Lancre, a newly initiated witch said to the devil, "I put myself wholly in thy power and in thy hands, recognizing no other God, for thou art my God." Agnes Wobster of Aberdeen, tried in 1596, was accused of calling Satan her God. The Northumberland witches, tried in 1673, called the devil their blessed savior and their God. Martin del Rio said that witches hailed the devil as creator, giver, and preserver of all, and Sylvain Névillon confessed at Orléans in 1614 that witches recognized the devil as their God, master, and creator. References to the devil as creator and master suggest the belief that the world was made and is ruled by the devil, God being far away. One of the attractions of the witch religion seems to have been the fact that the God was visibly present at the Sabbath, incarnate in a man or animal, in contrast to Christ, who had been taken up to heaven. Him they saw, but God they could not see. And some said that the idol of the Templars was the head of him who made us and has not left us. The witches themselves, apparently, referred to their God as the devil in most cases, and many of the names given to him imply that he was consciously identified as the devil of Christianity. Satan, Lucifer, Beelzebub, Belial, Astaroth, Asmodeus, Mammon. In 1595, Jean Delvaux, a monk of the Abbey of Stablo in the Netherlands, who confessed without torture, said that the being worshipped at the Sabbath was Beelzebub. The witches kissed his footprints, and before the feasting began, a grace was said, "In the name of Beelzebub, our Grand Master, Sovereign Commander and Lord." The devil sometimes told his flock to revenge themselves, probably because he was the Christian Satan. "Revenge yourselves or die," the Poitiers witches were told. And at the Sabbath's end, according to Martin del Rio, the devil said, "Let us take our revenge, so that you may know the law that is opposed to the law of charity, for if we do not, we shall die." Presumably this meant that unless Christianity was overthrown, the devil and his followers would not gain eternal life. It seems clear that the devil who appeared at the Sabbath was a man, the leader of the society. He was often a black or dark man, befitting the devil's role as Prince of Darkness. He was said to be icy cold, like the skeletal man whom the Luciferan initiate had to kiss. Descriptions of his voice sometimes suggest that he was speaking through a mask. The French demonologist Nicolas Remy, writing in 1591, said that demons have voices like one speaking in the bunghole of a barrel, and the devil's voice was frequently said to be thin or hoarse and hard to understand. When the devil appeared as an animal, he was apparently a man dressed up. Anne-Marie de Jorgel's man of huge stature was dressed in animal skins. At Poitiers, the devil was a goat who talked like a man. At Vrissy in 1616, he was a black dog who stood on his hind legs and talked. In Guernsey in 1617, Isabel Becquet went to the Sabbath and saw the devil as a horned dog, which, with one of his paws, which seemed to her like hands, took her by the hand and, calling her by her name, told her that she was welcome. Sometimes the disguises were elaborate. The Bamberg witches said that the devil appeared as a man or a he-goat or a green devil with an owl's head, horns, a black or fiery face, the feet of a goat, a long tail, and hands with talons. According to the Scottish witch, Agnes Sampson, the devil's body was hard like iron, and he had a nose like an eagle's beak, burning eyes, hairy hands and legs, and claws on his hands and feet. The devil's fondness for horns may have come from his link with the number two, and it is not surprising that he should appear as an animal, since demons had long been believed to show themselves in animal form or in fantastic composite shapes. The early Christian fathers had described devils appearing as animals or as composite creatures, like Isabel Becquet's dog with horns or the Bamberg green devil. The devil showed himself most frequently as a goat, though never in this form in England or Scotland, oddly enough, but also as a cat, dog, bull, horse, sheep, or, very rarely, as a boar, bear, or stag. As a goat, he had horns, a tail, cloven hooves, and sometimes a reddish beard. He was usually black, and he limped. The link between the devil and the goat is probably connected with an essential feature of the Sabbath, the copulation of witches with the devil. In the earliest accounts of the Sabbath, Anne-Marie de Jorgel and Catherine de Laure both said that they served the pleasure of the he-goat. The belief that devils were capable of intercourse with human beings and desired it came mainly from Jewish traditions. For instance, the story of Adam's connections with Lilith and other demonesses. There were also numerous classical tales of intercourse between human women and the gods, who to Christians were devils, but the principal source was the legend of the Watchers. A connection between the Watchers, evil, and the goat was implied in the Jewish scapegoat ritual. In Leviticus, where this ritual is described, Aaron is told to select a goat for Azazel. He is to place both hands on the head of the goat and, quote, confess over him all the iniquities of the children of Israel and all their transgressions and all their sins, putting them upon the head of the goat, and shall send him away by the hand of a fit man into the wilderness, unquote. The Jews performed the ritual down to A.D. 70. The goat was led out into the desert and thrown over a cliff. A scarlet woolen thread was tied to its head, apparently in reference to Isaiah 1:18, though your sins be as scarlet, they shall be white as snow. Hundreds of years later, a red thread or cord was the mark of a witch. The ritual was not forgotten. Writing in the 13th century, Rabbi Moses ben Naaman explained that God has commanded us, however, to send a goat on Yom Kippur to the ruler whose realm is in the places of desolation. From the emanation of his power comes destruction and ruin. He is associated with the planet Mars, and his portion among the animals is the goat. The demons are part of his realm and are called in the Bible Seirim, he-goats, unquote. This ruler in the wilderness to whom the goat was sent was Azazel, the star fallen from heaven, who was the leader of the Watchers in 1 Enoch. Associated with Mars, he had taught men to make weapons of war. He had been imprisoned in the desert by God until the day of judgment, when he was to be hurled into the fire. The scapegoat ritual tended to connect the goat, which bore all the sins of the people, with impurity and evil. Through the link with Azazel, it also connected the goat with the devil and the fallen angels. In St. Matthew's Gospel, Jesus says that he will come in glory and divide all the people as a shepherd divideth his sheep from the goats. The goats are the wicked, who will be cast into the everlasting fire prepared for the devil and his angels. Azazel was the leader of the Watchers, who lusted after the daughters of men, and also the chief of the Seirim, or goat demons, who are mentioned several times in the Old Testament and were worshipped by some of the Jews. Rehoboam appointed priests for them, and Josiah destroyed the places of their worship. Just as the watchers took mortal women for wives, so the cult of the Seorim seems to have involved the copulation of women with goats. Leviticus says, "Neither shall any woman stand before a beast to lie down thereto." And earlier, "And they shall no more offer their sacrifices unto the Seorim, after whom they have gone a-whoring." A similar cult existed in Egypt in Plutarch's time. A divine he-goat was worshipped at Mendes, the most beautiful women being chosen to couple with it. This is Eliphaz Levi's Goat of Mendes, which he believed to have been the goat of the witch's Sabbath, and which he also called the Baphomet of Mendes. The story of the watchers and their lust for human women was well known in the Middle Ages. Through this link between the goat, Azazel, the watchers, and the Seorim, the connection may have developed between devil worship and the fornication of women with the devil in the form of a goat. The medieval belief that witches coupled with an animal which was their god was probably strengthened by the passage in Exodus beginning with the terrible verse, "Thou shalt not suffer a witch to live," constantly quoted by witch hunters. The next verse prohibits lying with a beast, and the next, the worship of any god but Jehovah. "Thou shalt not suffer a witch to live. Whosoever lieth with a beast shall surely be put to death. He that sacrificeth unto any god save the Lord only, he shall be utterly destroyed." Some modern writers have suggested that memories of the cult of the Greek god Dionysus survived to influence the Sabbath. There is no evidence of this, but there are several similarities between Dionysus and the devil of the witches. Both appealed particularly to women, and the rites of both were orgiastic. In animal form, Dionysus sometimes appeared as a goat, though more often as a bull. At Eleutherae, the village from which his cult was exported to Athens, he was called Melanigis, he with the black goatskin, and there was a ritual combat between the black one and the light one, which suggests a parallel with the struggle between the devil and God. At Delphi, Dionysus ruled the winter months and was apparently linked with the night sun or black sun, leading the dance of the stars, in contrast with the bright sun god Apollo, who ruled the rest of the year. Dionysus was connected with the underworld, like other gods of fertility and vegetation, because plants and trees grow from beneath the surface of the ground. He was attended by satyrs, lustful goat spirits, like the Jewish Seorim. The god Pan, whose cult spread throughout the Greek world, was also a leader of satyrs. Half man and half goat, he was a lustful and energetic god, a giver of fertility. He played on a reed pipe, and the witches of Poitiers said that they danced round the devil while he played on a pipe with a shrill and hideous note. According to the Murray theory, the devil appeared as a goat and in other animal forms because he was the pagan horned god of Western Europe. Cernunnos, a stag god of Gaul, has been selected for this honor, although little is known about him and nothing about the form which his worship took. He was a god of fertility and the underworld, sometimes shown with three heads like Hecate, and associated with the serpent like the devil. Julius Caesar said that the Gauls believed themselves to be descended from Dispater, a Roman god of the underworld. The native name of this god is not known, but if he was Cernunnos, this might provide a connection with the devil as creator of the world and man. The survival of Cernunnos is unlikely. None of the laws against paganism in Western Europe mention a horned god or any god in animal form at all. However, the pagan practice of dressing up in animal masks and costumes on certain occasions did carry over into Christian times. Saint Caesarius of Arles, who died in 542, said that some dressed themselves in the skins of cattle, others put on the heads of beasts, rejoicing and exulting. Later, in the 6th century, the Council of Auxerre condemned people who masqueraded as bull calves or stags on the 1st of January. Theodore, first Archbishop of Canterbury, 668-690, condemned various pagan survivals, and also evildoers, fortune-tellers, poisoners, and, quote, "anyone who goes about as a stag or a bull calf on the 1st of January, that is, turning himself into a wild animal and dressing in the skins of cattle and putting on the heads of beasts, because this is devilish, unquote. This type of masked revelry has continued to the present day, but it does not indicate the survival of a cult. Mumming dances in animal costumes are still performed in England, but the dancers are not devotees of a pagan god any more than American children in Halloween masks. Nor does the 1st of January seem to have been an important witch festival. But the tradition of dressing up as an animal at times of revelry may have influenced the witches and their devil. At some Sabbaths, the worshippers as well as the god dressed in masks, animal heads and skins, though in most cases they wore their ordinary clothes or went naked. What seems more likely than the survival of a particular cult, of Sir Nunos, Dionysus, Pan, or any pagan god, is the survival of an idea. The witches, who were magicians as well as devil worshippers, apparently shared the magical and pagan sense of the value of the animal side of human nature. Dancing and reveling in animal costumes and the orgiastic worship of an animal god imply the letting loose of the animal and man. In magical theory, this is an essential step to the achievement of wholeness, in which man becomes divine, and the Gnostic and heretical belief that experience of all acts and sensations is necessary for salvation expresses the same idea. The witches probably believed that they attained the divine in the Sabbath orgy, and especially in sexual union with God, who was often in animal form and was said to copulate from the rear as animals do. The release of the animal in orgy was frequently approached through wild and frenzied dancing, usually in a circle and moving to the left, the side of evil. A Spanish author, Petrus Valderrama, said that witches danced, quote, in strange fashion, turning their shoulders to each other and taking hold of arms, they rise from the ground and descend, turning around and shaking the head from side to side like fools, unquote. According to Martin del Rio, they danced in couples, back to back and hand in hand, tossing their heads in frenzy. Dancing back to back was considered obscene in the Middle Ages, presumably because it reversed the normal position. In the orgy itself, the witches were accused of committing every conceivable perversion, with other witches and with the devil, and the Sabbath culminated in an animal madness of sensuality, of mingled torment and delight, in which the worshippers attained ecstasy. The union with the devil was usually described as painful, many witches saying that it was as agonizing as childbirth. The devil's member was scaly, Jeannette d'Abadie said, and she suffered extreme pain. The devil's phallus was unnaturally large, and both it and his emission were cold. The explanation now generally accepted is that an artificial phallus was used. But the experience was also said to be intensely pleasurable. Paulus Grillandus, a judge in witch trials at Rome in the early 16th century, found that witches enjoyed the devil with the utmost voluptuousness. A young French witch said, I will not be other than I am. I find too much content in my condition. I am always caressed. In Scotland in 1662, Isabel Gowdy told her accusers that the devil was heavy like a malt sack, a huge nature, very cold as ice. But also, he is abler for us that way than any man can be. The same perverse mixture of pleasure and pain appears in accounts of flagellation at the Sabbath. Witches were frequently beaten because they had not done enough harm or had displeased the devil in some other way. Isabel Gowdy said they would tease the devil and then he would whip them. He would be beating and scourging us all up and down with cords and other sharp scourges, like naked ghosts. And we would still be crying, pity, pity, mercy, mercy, our Lord. But he would have neither pity nor mercy. As one authority commented, this sounds much more like a scrimmage of combined sadistic and masochistic pleasure than anything else. The ecstatic pleasure of the Sabbath had a strong hold on many witches, and some of them remained faithful to the devil to the death. A young Lorraine witch, Jean de Basson, said that the Sabbath was the true paradise where there was more pleasure than it was possible to describe. Marie de la Ralde, aged 28 and a very beautiful woman, said it was an intense pleasure to go to the Sabbath, not so much because of the license and freedom they enjoyed there, but because the devil had such an overmastering grip on their hearts and wills that they could scarcely be conscious of any other desire. He made them believe that he was the true God, and that the joy of the Sabbath was only the beginning of much greater glory. In England, Rebecca West and Rose Halibred died very stubborn and refractory, without any remorse or seeming terror of conscience for their abominable witchcraft. Eleanor Shaw and Mary Phillips were asked to say their prayers at their execution, but they laughed loudly, calling for the devil to come and help them in such a blasphemous manner as is not fit to mention, and as they lived the devil's true factors, so they resolutely died in his service. When Roland du Vernois was on her way to be burned alive, the priest pleaded with her to repent and save her soul by reconciling herself with God, but she would only say that she had had a good master, and so died. It was widely believed that witches and sorcerers signed a formal contract with the devil on entering his service. In 1320, an inquisitor in Carcassonne was ordered to proceed against people who sacrificed to demons, worshipped them and paid them homage, or gave them writings and made pacts with them. Errores Gaiseriorum, about 1450, describing the initiation of a witch, says that the devil draws blood from the witch's left hand and writes with it on paper and keeps the paper. The pact was usually written in the signer's own blood, which carried his life energy, and so bound his life to the devil. The pact with the devil has taken a firm grip on the human imagination and has been the subject of innumerable stories. In return for Satan's favors, the signer pledges his body and soul at death or after a stated number of years. The devil lusts for the human body because, as a spiritual being, he longs for matter to make himself complete, and for the human soul because it belongs to his enemy, God. His desire to expand the area of darkness and diminish the regions of light drives the devil to accept a bargain in which, according to the stories, he is frequently cheated. Though, perhaps, the enemy is not so often swindled. He who affirms the devil, according to Eliphas Levi, creates or makes the devil. Once the incubus has been conjured up in the magician's imagination, it may not be easy to dispose of it. In August 1677, a Bavarian painter named Christoph Heitzmann was taken to the police, apparently in a convulsion. Panic-stricken, he begged to be sent to a nearby shrine of the Virgin Mary. 9 years before, he had made a pact with Satan, written in blood from the palm of his right hand. The term of the pact was now about to run out, and he was in terror that the devil was coming to fetch him. The police believed his story and took him to the shrine. After 3 days and nights of exorcism there, the repentant Heitzmann saw the Virgin in a vision, subduing the devil and forcing him to give up the pact. It read, "Christoph Heitzmann, I sell myself to this Satan, to be his own bodily son, and belong to him both body and soul in the 9th year. 100 years later, in 1785, two women were broken on the wheel at Hamburg for the murder of a Jew. They had killed him because they needed his blood for writing a pact with the devil. Lecturing in Paris in 1929, Maurice Garçon, a lawyer, writer, and authority on black magic, described how he had watched a sorcerer invoking Satan in a wood near Fontainebleau. Hidden among the trees, he saw the magician draw a circle on the ground and begin the rites on the stroke of midnight. 2 pitch-black candles flickered with a dull blue flame, and smoke curled up from herbs burning in a silver censer. The magician stalked about the circle, widdershins, reciting incantations, until at the peak of the ceremony he offered the devil a pact scrawled in his own blood. Presenting his soul in payment, he also promised to win Satan a devotee for every wish he was granted, every lust that was satisfied. But the devil did not appear without question, Montague Summers said, because of the profane watcher's presence. The idea of the pact seems to have been an offshoot of the early Christian belief that magicians could only perform their arts successfully through the assistance of supernatural beings. As black magicians were obviously not connected with God, they must be receiving help from the devil. The possibility of making a formal contract with the powers of hell is hinted at as early as the writings of Origen, who died in A.D. 254. But the main impetus to belief in it came from St. Augustine, who said that sorcerers, astrologers, and other dabblers in the occult were in league with demons. He condemned, quote, all arts of this kind arising from the pestiferous association of men with demons as if formed by a pact of faithless and dishonorable friendship, unquote. The scriptural authority for the pact was Isaiah 28:15. This verse originally had nothing to do with the contract with the devil, but the Vulgate translation suggested that it did. Percurimus fidus cum morte et cum inferno fecimus pactum. We have signed a treaty with death, and with hell we have made a pact. Gradually, stories began to circulate about people who had signed themselves over to the devil. One of the most popular was the story of Theophilus, which has been traced back to the 6th century. Theophilus was an upright Christian who was steward of his local church, but a group of intriguing clergy who disliked him persuaded the bishop to dismiss him. Determined to recover his position, he consulted a Jewish sorcerer who took him to a crossroads at night. There they met a throng of sinister figures who recalled the ghosts and demons which roamed the night with Hecate or Diana, dressed in white robes, carrying candles, and uttering loud cries. Their leader, who sat enthroned among them, agreed to help Theophilus if he would renounce Christianity. He did so, writing on parchment, I deny Christ and his mother, and sealing it with his ring. The next day he was reappointed steward, but in terror of what he had done, he prayed to the Virgin Mary. She came to him in a vision, and although she rebuked him, she gave him back the parchment he had signed. By the 13th century, additional details had been added. Theophilus had promised himself body and soul to the devil, vowing to endure the pains of hell with him to all eternity. He had written the pact in his own blood, and the devil had formally endorsed it. A play called The Miracle of Theophilus gives the wording of this endorsement. Quote, to all who shall see this open letter, I, Satan, let know that the fortune of Theophilus is changed indeed, and that he has done me homage, so might he have once more his lordship, and that with the ring of his finger he has sealed this letter, and with his blood written it, and no other ink has used herein. Unquote. A written pact which is still preserved is the one allegedly signed by Urbain Grandier, a priest of Loudun, who was convicted of bewitching nuns and enslaving them to Satan. He confessed under agonizing torture and was burned alive. At his trial in 1634, the pact he had made with Lucifer, written in his own blood, was produced in evidence. My lord and master Lucifer, I acknowledge you as my god and prince, and promise to serve and obey you while I live, and I renounce the other God and Jesus Christ, the saints, the Church of Rome and all its sacraments, and all prayers that the faithful may offer me. And I promise to do as much evil as I can, and to draw all others to evil. And I renounce chrism, baptism, and all the merits of Jesus Christ and his saints. And if I fail to serve and adore you, paying you homage 3 times a day, I give you my life as your own, made this year and day, signed Urbain Grandier. Also produced, and also still preserved, was an endorsement signed from hell by Satan, Beelzebub, Lucifer, Elimi, Leviathan, and Astaroth, accepting the pact. Written from right to left, with all the words spelled backwards, it promised Grandier the love of women, the flower of virgins, and all worldly honors, riches, and pleasure. He was required to pray to the devils instead of to God, and to trample underfoot the sacraments of the church. He was promised a happy life on earth for 20 years, after which he would join the devils in hell to curse God. The grimoires pay little attention to the pact with the devil. Their rituals are intended to subject evil spirits to the magician's control, and when in need of supernatural assistance, they seek it from God. From their point of view, to barter away one's soul in a pact is the desperate resort of the second-rate sorcerer. The Grand Grimoire gives an unimpressive process for making a pact, which is really only a method of raising a loan from the devil, and which must be used if the magician is too weak and inefficient to compel the obedience of the demons. The second-rate sorcerer naturally had to deal with a second-rate spirit, and the pact is not made with the devil himself, but with one of his subordinates, Lucifuge Rofecale. Lucifuge means fly the light, and Mephistopheles, the name of the demon with whom Faust signed a pact, may be a faulty Greek rendering of Lucifuge. Rofecale seems to be an anagram of Focalor, the name of a devil in the Lamegaton who appears as a man with wings. To make the pact, the magician goes to an isolated place and draws a triangle on the ground with a bloodstone, preferably a hematite. He places a candle on either side of the triangle, and below it writes the name Jesus, an example of the grimoire's persistent tendency to call on God for help even on the most unsuitable occasions. Standing in the triangle and holding a rod of hazel as his wand, the magician chants an incantation calling on Lucifer, Beelzebub, and Astaroth to favor and protect him, and summoning Lucifuge Rofakael to appear. When the demon comes, he says, "I am here. What do you want of me? Why do you disturb my rest? Answer me." The magician explains that he wants to make a pact and be given treasure in return. The demon says, "I cannot grant your request unless you will agree to give me your body and soul after 20 years to do with as I please." Then the magician throws the pact which he has already prepared to the demon. Written and signed in blood on parchment, it says, "I promise the great Lucifuge to reward him in 20 years for all treasure which he gives me." Not surprisingly, Lucifuge Rofakael may be most unwilling to accept this vague pact with all its obvious loopholes. He is likely to vanish, and must be threatened with names of power and recalled. He then appears, complaining that the magician is tormenting him, and grumblingly agrees to lead the magician to the nearest treasure in return for the payment of 1 coin every month. If the payments are not kept up, he will seize the magician for his own after 20 years. The magician agrees, and Lucifuge Rofakael endorses the pact, returns it to the magician, and takes him to the treasure. Modern witches are extremely secretive, and very little about their beliefs and practices is known to outsiders. There are said to be as many as 6,000 of them in England, with the number steadily increasing. Like other magicians, they insist that they are devoted to good works. Their wax images are intended to heal the sick, and far from blasting crops or eating babies, they try to assist the fertility of nature. A recent report in Life describes how they build a fire in the open and draw a magic circle round it with a sword. Then they join hands inside the circle, men and women alternately, and walk round the fire, quickening the pace to a run and chanting a supposedly ancient but bogus-sounding incantation, "Iko Iko Azarak, Iko Iko Zomalak, Iko Iko Gananas, Iko Iko Arada." The witches worship a moon goddess whose name is secret, but who is probably Diana, and a sun god, who may be Lucifer. They believe in reincarnation and a lord of the underworld who determines when and where the witches will be reborn. This lord is perhaps Lucifer as Black Sun, and also perhaps Cernunnos, the horned god. The witches say that their goddess, the queen of heaven and all living, went down to the underworld and mated with its lord, which is a version of the myth of Persephone, the Greek queen of the underworld and a goddess of crops and fertility. Heavily affected by the Murray theory, the modern witches have gone back beyond the era of the witch trials to the pagan rites from which they believe witchcraft sprang. Some of them claim to have preserved druid traditions. They are organized in covens of 13, each headed by a high priest or high priestess. They celebrate the 4 great pagan festivals, especially May Eve and All Hallows Eve, when they leap through bonfires as the pagans did on Beltane and Samhain. This is imitative magic designed to aid and stimulate the activity of the sun, the source of life on earth. As badges of rank, the witches wear garters, sometimes of snakeskin. They usually perform their ceremonies naked, and there are hints of flagellatory rituals. Whether they adore the black bulk of the goat squatting on its altar is not known, but they say that their rites bring them a profound sense of security and peace.